Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Bloody May.
Bloody May, we are going to unleash vampirism on you. You didn't know it, but you're going to catch vampirism of the ear.
Vampirism of the ear.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I've always been into vampirism ever since I was a little child.
Do you like vampires, Nick?
Yeah, vampires.
You hate zombies, like vampires.
Randy, current state of yes or no on vampires.
Like vampires, like yeah. Zombies. A little lukewarm on Creatures of Black Lagoons.
I think a lot of people, a little burned out on vampirism.
Sure.
But is it a general thing? Of course I like vampires.
What about masked serial killers Jason style? Where are we on that?
Suck ass.
I'm just saying, I was like Anne Rice, all of her vampires, yeah. I was big into them.
They're a versatile one. And then, like, when I was an 80s kid, we had, like, also, like, the kind of, like, the gritty vampires of, what's the one that Catherine Bigelow?
Near Dark.
Yeah. Those were, like, some gritty-ass, like, Texas vampires.
What about Das Vampir and Zuvembis?
So you may be wondering, why the hell are they talking about those vampires? It's because Marvel's launching their big ol' summer event, Blood Hunt, this week, which is a vampire-themed thing. And we'll talk more about it in a minute.
It'll probably be the focus that we're talking. I think this is the big release. It's a big comics week.
It is.
But that's a big week. But that wasn't all that I was going to talk about.
Oh.
It's a violent comics week.
It is.
Oh, yeah,
when we talk about comics, there is a lot of... If you're a certain type of person... If you like heavy metal and blood and chains, maybe bears, Vikings, westerns, there's all kinds of violent comics for you this week.
Yeah. You know, every once in a while we do get somebody who walks in the store and is like, do you have anything really like violent and messed up? Do you like Garth Ennis stuff and stuff like
that?
Boy,
do we have that for you this week.
Including an actual Garth Ennis outing, which I will say I did think it was pretty well done.
Yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah, but I was like, ooh, that was messed up.
And also... Dr. Seuss.
And also Dr. Seuss, yes. That is, he is fighting a lonely battle. by the way, we should say Dr. Seuss property, but not actual written from beyond the grave
by
Dr.
Seuss.
I'm saying it's written beyond the grave.
Oh, Randy, Nick has knowledge that I don't. But I guess that does fit the vampire.
Yes. Vampire Dr. Seuss's graphic novel.
So this is going to be an interesting podcast where it's a little bit of, oh, you know what? May 4th, in addition to being... Free Comic Book Day, and May the 4th be with you. It is also halfway to Halloween.
What a big week.
Yeah, I don't even have time to like engage with it, I think. But I'm going to try and watch something spooky within a week of it. Yeah, I wasn't that excited about Abigail.
I know.
But it would be just, on brand
it's just,
for
it's just stupid vampire stuff.
Vampires aren't dumb.
We're gonna have fun talking about all of that stuff. But are we still doing? Let's start with games and stuff.
Yes, let's start with games. So, want to mention before we get into the games that in addition to Free Comics this week, we have Serena has put together goodie bags.
Oh yeah,
for the first 48 kids in line.
That's pretty good.
If you're the first 48 kids coming through, you will get an extra little goodie bag. And these goodie bags, we watched her put them together yesterday. They have, a little superhero keychain, a mask, a little, like, sticker thing where you can build a character.
Yeah.
They are very cool little goodie bags.
Yeah. If you're one of the folks who kind of makes that trek out early on Saturday and you're, like, in line for an hour before coming in.
You're like, why did we get up at 8 a.m. on a Saturday?
I'm so tired already and the day hasn't even begun. Well, your kid is going to be through the roof excited to get this.
And you'll get the best selection of comics, which we'll talk about that later, but the selection this year looks great.
Yeah, I think it is the best year that I can recall, to be honest.
Yeah.
There may have been other ones to challenge it, but like this is the best one that I recall, is just as far as like the overall quality, I think.
Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in there. All right, it was also a big week for games.
Okay.
We got... An RPG called Dr. Grogbort's Scientific Adventure Violence.
Speaking of violence. The Dr. Grogbort license has been around for, like, floating around in the ether for, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
And it always had, like, kind of a retro future thing, like Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon. Is this still continuing
that? Yes, it is. Like, it's like pulp adventure kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it looks, it's got really nice art. If you like that sort of...
Is it an RPG or a board game?
It's
though?
An RPG.
It's an RPG, okay. Yeah.
So if you want an adventure in, like, a Victorian era where you use science to cause violence...
Yeah.
It
yeah.
looks cool.
I believe, yeah, it particularly engages with the pulp side of that stuff, so...
There is also a couple of expansions of the Dune RPG. There is the Star Trek RPG has the Federation Klingon War sourcebook.
Oh, yeah.
Which is interesting because they've done the Discovery sourcebook they did... is also in that era, and I thought yep. they sort of covered it, but this is apparently, like, very much about Federation Klingon warfare.
Was it you I was talking about? Was
yeah.
Like, yeah.
This actually sounded like an interesting source book.
They had a thing so that, like, if you're playing a character, like, in a campaign that runs through here, like, you will actually adjust your character to a wartime posture, sort of.
Okay.
You'll, like, figure out, you know, how what they're doing during the war. Do they, you know, pick up any scars, mental or physical, and things like that. So... It's meant to, like, not just be flavor, but, I mean, it is that, but also to, like, really make it feel like you're engaging with a different vibe.
Okay, well, that's kind of cool.
Which is pretty cool, I think.
And then we've got the Pathfinder Tien Shui, which is their sort of Japanese-Chinese. Okay. It's like their... that setting. With the
Their sort of, feudal fantasy Asian flair vibe. That's Pathfinder.
It's a Pathfinder source book.
They all, you know, they always have, like, such good lore and setting stuff. So I want to read through this because I'm sure there is, like, 8 billion awesome springboards for adventure.
Well, and one of the, in addition to being a world guide, it is also a character guide. So I believe there's some different races, some fantasy races you can play.
Oh, nice.
I forget who what they call them ancestries now, but I'm like, there's a.
I feel like kitsunes and stuff like that, and I don't know, can you play a kappa?
There are 20, yes, kappa, I believe, was one of the playable races. So 20 different nations, giant poster map.
Yep.
And I feel like, I wish it would tell me exactly how many, I feel like I saw the different character races, but there's cool little extra new ancestries and stuff in there, too.
Yeah, that sounds like a... Honestly, like, I don't even play Pathfinder, but I would consider picking that up just to read through.
Yep. We also got the G.I. Joe RPG standee pack, which is all little characters and little standees, and it's not just... It's everyone from the G.I. Joe sourcebook, the adventures that have come out, and the Cobra sourcebook. So basically,
that's pretty cool.
Every Joe and Cobra.
If you want to have miniatures, this is
also,
what you get.
It's also not just the characters. They're also vehicles.
Vehicles and
stuff.
Oh, that's
cool. Honestly am very tempted by this. Even
though, I mean...
Even though I've only played that G.I. Joe game once, and I don't think I'll be going back to it.
It seems like something to have around.
I kind of
you know,
want
you just need a little Major Blood and a his tank and stuff and a gung-ho.
Yeah.
and that's all I need. Major Blood and a his tank and a gung-ho.
What about Chuckles?
I said what I said.
We got Tiny Epic Vikings, which is the latest in the Tiny Epic series.
Yep.
This has been selling really well. People seem very excited about this.
We got the Vikings and we got an expansion for it.
And we got an expansion for it, yeah.
I feel like I should play one of these Tiny Epic games at some point.
Well, they all play very differently is the thing.
Oh, interesting.
Like, one of the things
it's
about
not just like a
boxes,
reskinning.
But no, every game they play is very different.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
We got Last Light. This is a game I played at Board Game Geek last year. It is what they call a 4X...
exploration, explore. Yeah.
Usually those games like Twilight Imperium, they take like 8 hours.
Right.
Last Light is a rare one in that you can do this and play it inside of about an hour.
Expand, explore, ex-wife.
Usually, yes.
Different game.
No, it's what happens if all you do is play 4X games. But it has little 3D planets and stuff.
Huh?
And so basically the board rotates, like, and you're sort of conquering planets and sending ships out and developing your armada and stuff. But in addition to being a sort of a complicated 4X game, it's pretty straightforward to learn, and it plays in like an hour. I was pretty impressed when I played it. So if you like those type of games, but you don't like having to play all day.
It reminds me.
You don't want to, you know, Twilight Imperium the
right,
day.
Right, exactly.
Very early on working here... I remember, you know, an early game that I liked was Memoir 44.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dope game. And also, you could play one of its scenarios. It was a World War II game. And you could play its scenarios in, like, an hour or just, like, a little longer, maybe.
Yeah.
As opposed to the traditional Risk, Axis and Allies war games that people were used to where you sit down for, like, 3 to 6 hours. So, yeah. It's good to have these games.
We got a game called Paper App Dungeon.
Uh-huh.
This is a solo game, single player. It comes a little spiral-bound notebook, you know, like a little tiny 3x5 notebook, 60 pages, and a P6, which is a pencil that is also a D6.
Okay.
You can sort of roll the pencil and it has
all right.
It's
all right, like I don't a journal
game,
so far.
And you you generate a dungeon as you play.
Okay.
You basically, you roll the die to determine how you move, pick a direction, draw a line, interact with any outline, be it a monster, some treasure, or a teleporter.
That sounds fun.
Customize your character, roll your way through the floor, get items at shops, track stats like how many times you died. And it's kind of everyone is completely different because each notebook is different.
That's cool.
Yeah.
People are always looking for board games that give you something of the D&D experience. Obviously, yes. The role-playing thing, you know, you can kind of... It really needs to be a role-playing game to experience that. But there are board games that can give you the vibe, and it sounds like this accomplishes that.
Well, this is like you put the little D6 in the spiral, and you can carry the whole thing around in your pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
It also comes with a pretty awesome price point. It's $10.
$10.
If I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. Don't even bother then. I'm going to pick it up, y'all.
But that's pretty cool. I know my friend who works at this company has been very excited about this one.
That sounds dope. I do want to try it out.
We got another one's Adventure in a Box. This one is the Red Dragon Lair.
The D&D epic.
It's $100.
Yep.
But you get a Red Dragon mini.
A bunch of kobolds.
And a little map with some terrain.
That's right. I remember they're winged kobolds.
Yeah, they're winged kobolds. Yeah. But this is like a particularly cool version of the Adventure in a Box
thing. Scary kobolds.
And then we got the Heat Heavy Rain expansion. This is the car racing game, which is impossible to keep in stock.
I was going to say, much sought after, hardly ever found.
The expansion itself was also allocated. We only have a couple left. But this adds a lot more like rain effects and that kind of thing. It also adds another player. Heat is a game that goes up to 6. This lets it go up to 7 players.
Okay. That's
cool.
So it kind of matches it up with Formula D, the other racing game. And then we got a game called Home, which we got from a Kickstarter from about 3 years ago. Finally came in. This is a haunted house building RPG. So you've got like a dry erase map.
I'm immediately interested.
And some dry erase markers. And you ask people, give cards. They give you prompts as you go to this house that turns out to be a haunted house. And you essentially are drawing the map loosely and creating this haunted house together as you play.
Hmm.
It's not unlike, say, For the Queen, an RPG that we've all played that was sort of fun, where you just sort of like you start with the premise of you are on a trip with the queen, you're part of her entourage, and then they ask you questions about why do you do this, and one of you is going to betray the queen, or a point will come where you choose whether you betray the queen or not, and the story will inform you up to that point.
Yeah, and that was really fun. These it's kind of a hybrid of a role playing game with board game elements that give you prompts and creative, you know, movements.
Yeah, it's a lot of sort of collaborative storytelling. Mm-hmm. Really fun. I don't know how much this one is like it, but it seems like the same kind of vibe.
Yeah, I like scary stuff. Yep. And again, it's Halloween, y'all.
Also, because we kickstarted it, it comes with like 5 expansions with it.
What?
So when you get it, there's like 5 extra expansions.
Shut the front door.
All right, let's talk about comics. Let's talk about the bloodiest comic week in all of 2024.
Yes, unleash the shining elevator full of blood.
So first, and for a long time we're going to talk about this, probably a big discussion, but let's talk about Blood Hunt.
Yep.
First thing you should know is that there are 2 different versions of Blood
Hunt.
There is the main version.
PG.
And then there's the R-rated, polybagged, slightly different story version.
Yeah, there's a couple of extra pages, and there's definitely some artwork changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I noticed at least one where it's like, okay, this is the same basic artwork, but this body on the floor or on the street had entrails spewing from it, whereas it was just kind of in a little puddle of blood or something in the other. Now, it's... This is a kind of a gimmicky thing, and we didn't know what to think about it weeks ago. But as it approached and we heard some of the ideas going into it, we were like, oh, well, the story sounds cool.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I think maybe because the horror genre has done gimmicky stuff before, and the most famous is William Castle, that 60s movie producer who would do, like, I'm trying to think of what his movies, but like he would, like, do buzzers under seats and stuff like that.
The Tingler
to like terrify people when things were going to happen in the movie.
13 Ghosts?
I think he did do that, yeah. He was portrayed, or they did a movie sort of loosely based on him in the movie Matinee where John Goodman played him.
Okay.
Or an analog to him for sure. And Joe Dante made that movie. But anyway, this feels like that. Like, you know, like, it could be that in 6 months, if this does well, that they'll be like, oh, you know, are you getting the regular X-Men or the super violent blood X-Men?
I really don't want that to happen.
But we don't want that to happen. But for right now, it seems like a kind of a fun novelty where I read the original version and I was like, that was actually really cool. I like a lot about this story, which we'll tell you a little bit about in a second. But then Nick busted out his copy of the secret bagged edition with its red band.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's fun. And like, there was some good gory scenes if you're like a horror fan. Notably, one or two things kind of near the end strike a little bit harder if you're that person. Now, I don't think that if you're buying the original, like, you're getting let down or anything.
No. But, they're both good books.
Like, and I think, like, and some people aren't just really into horror and stuff like that. They're superheroes and horror. They don't really want to mix. But you have an option here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, story-wise,
yes, this
what
is,
kind of makes...
This is a big event.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is going to... This is in continuity at Marvel.
Right. Kind of like a horror-themed, if you want, Civil War or one of those other sort of Marvel events.
I think we all started a little skeptical about this.
For sure.
Yeah.
We like the writer, Jed MacKay.
Yes.
But, like, we haven't liked every single project he's on. And so there was a little skepticism about that. But
y'all have really liked his Moon Knight recently.
Moon Knight, Spider-Man, or his Black Cat run. Black Cat. His Doctor Strange run is good. So, like, he's got a lot of bona fides going on. We heard the premise, and the premise is pretty cool. We're not going to say too much about what comes after it, but... The Dark Force, which powers a lot of Marvel heroes like Cloak from Cloak and Dagger, or what's his name?
Shroud.
Shroud.
Something. Also a lot of
Blackout.
Blackout. Something is tapping into it and using them to generate this massive coverage of darkness on the Earth. And so essentially, kind of like in 30 Days of Night, but worldwide, there is a global, like, blackout.
It is called Sun Death.
Sun Death. Cool name. Cool name.
It is a cool name.
They actually, the book does open with, like, sort of a T-minus kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where you're getting this countdown as the blackouts are happening and these people, like, Cloak and stuff like that.
Yep.
It's almost like darkness explodes from them and goes straight up into the air and into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then you start to see, they start to give you, shortly after the... Plus, you know, like, instead of T minus, now it's black Sun Death plus 5 minutes, Sun Death plus 20 minutes,
right. Yep.
And you see vampires are just starting to unleash, and there has been setup for this a little bit in Jed MacKay's comics over the last few years.
Yep.
Especially like Moon Knight in particular.
He's been doing a lot of like a vampire cult in Moon Knight. Yeah.
But there's also like it doesn't come up big time in this, but. Dracula himself, the recurring Marvel version of Dracula,
right.
has like founded like a vampire nation,
mm-hmm.
right?
And they're like figuring out. They're like, oh, is Dracula behind this? He's the obvious person, but there's some skepticism about it because they're like, well, he's been working hard to kind of have this sovereign nation. It doesn't seem like he was doing it just to attack the world,
right?
And so there's mysteries to this. There's mysteries going on, and some big reveals in the first issue, which we will not reveal.
Yep.
But so who are you gonna? We're gonna see in this is like a lot of Marvel superheroes. Vampire fighting Blade is of course in it.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in there?
Doctor Strange.
Some mystics
Spider-Man,
and stuff.
The entire cast of Moon Knight. So
I like that they called out. I don't think this is like a giveaway that the Montesi formula that Doctor Strange used in the 80s, where for a time he actually
there
did
were no vampires.
He banished all vampires from the MCU or from the Marvel universe for like a few, not more than a few years. I think it was like 8 or 10 years.
Yeah.
Like Kane likes to have nice references to past Marvel things.
For sure. Yeah.
And he utilizes the Marvel universe well.
It's got a good artist on it. Is it Pepe Larraz?
Yep. Who worked on House of X or Rise of X.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Who draws like a badass Sanctum Sanctorum for Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Has a lot of fun, honestly, drawing the gory stuff.
Yeah.
It was fun looking through and seeing the difference between Nick's copy and the regular copy.
Well, this also feels like a big event. It feels like a big summer event. And the scope is very cool.
We're only guessing what the actual scope will be, but it's like these vampires in this first issue seem to have quite the body count in it.
Yeah.
Well, and like taking over a lot of places.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that I don't think they're going to do something where Doctor Strange snaps his fingers and it's like, everybody's fixed.
Nope.
I think it's going to be a little bit more like when Thanos made half the universe disappear in the movies. And they're like, oh, there's going to be fallout for years in the stories of this. We know that there's at least going to be a lot of immediate fallout from it when it ends. Like, we know there's going to be through-line stuff. It's going to change probably the shape of the Marvel Universe in some way.
Well, and I like that a lot of... Like, the subsequent books that we're going to be getting in this are not small characters, but they're the ones who don't always get like a full-on series. So, well, like Union Jack and
Jubilee, who has at what has at times been a vampire. Mm-hmm. She got turned like several years ago.
Yep.
She's getting a one shot.
I think that's so cool. Like, they're remembering all their vampire history. So Union Jack has also, they've fought vampires
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the big deals for the original Union Jack. Yep. It was a, but also the Midnight Suns, they're going to come
yep,
back. Yeah.
Yep, which makes sense.
The, I guess, Avengers roster, or is...
It's going to at least temporarily change, yeah.
And we know that Hercules is joining, which is exciting. There's just sounds like some fun stuff on the horizon.
Sort of related to that, there. This also has some big action set pieces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a huge throwdown with like the Avengers and these. There's a, like sort of a new vampiric particular threat team has shown up, and those guys do battle. They have cool designs. Those remind me of sort of honestly kind of like video game cool designs, you know, like I was telling Randy what are those, like Dark Souls kind of yeah. stuff. Yeah,
it has a, this is gonna either, you're gonna agree with me or not agree with me, it feels very Blade 2, the Guillermo del Toro
like his
hunting vampire yeah, okay. hunting crew.
I think so. I mean, honestly, like I have somewhat mixed feelings on that movie, but I think you're right in like that part of the comparison.
Yeah.
I'm not a big event guy, but this one has my attention.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this first.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to reading more of it. Yeah.
What other number ones do we get?
Oh, well, by the way, there's a Moon Knight this week that ties into it.
Right, Venom's Moon Knight does tie in. So, we've also got Get Fury number one. Speaking of, this is a Marvel Max book. So, just as bloody as the bagged version of Blood Hunt.
I was going to make the point that Marvel isn't doing this to, like, test, you know, like, if they can do R-rated material. There is much more R-rated material in the Marvel Max line from, like, the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this alone is, like, arguably more violent.
So I'm trying to remember and remind
it's
me.
A different vibe.
Because this is Garth Ennis
yep.
going back to sort of Punisher.
It's when Frank Castle was in Vietnam. But he likes to hang to that timeline. And he has not left yet. He's Captain Castle. Castle.
And the artist is Jason Burroughs.
Yeah.
When did they work together? Because
They worked on Cross and some of that stuff. Oh, they're not Cross, but they worked together at that place.
Yeah, Jason Burroughs did a whole lot with. Well, what's that name of that company?
Avatar.
Which Jason Burroughs draws the hell out of horror and bloody.
He's very good at it, but he's also like good with.
He's a good storyteller.
This is a good
soldiers and the era and the, all the military stuff that Ennis loves.
Here's the thing, Garth Ennis has done. He did a Fury miniseries, and he did Punisher Born. And I remember that the Fury series at least had Derek Robertson,
who was
passed. And I don't remember who did the Punisher Born, but it might also have been Derek Robertson. So I feel like Burroughs is like the replacement, and he stands in pretty well here.
Yeah, and Punisher Born was really quite good. So these are stories about the darker side of Vietnam and stuff. And in this, Frank's he's a captain, so he's got some clout. He does the like recon patrols.
He runs like a special ops unit that that gets all the special treatment.
Yep. There's a fascinating thing early on where some like MPs are coming through, and they're actually like rounding up dogs that are on the base because there's like been an outbreak of rabies, and they're like, we got to put them all down. And like one of the guys in his special ops team has one. And the guy is like, I will kill you if you try and take my dog. And Frank's just up there, like, on guard, and he's like, whatever. He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But it did feel like a real slice of, like, the kind of breakdown in chain of command.
It's a Garth Ennis story, which is, you know what you're getting. You know that with all the good and the bad that entails.
Yep.
Right.
But I think we all enjoyed this. The central premise is that Colonel Fury, who's working with the CIA, has been captured by the Viet Cong.
Yep.
And Frank is basically like, they're like, look, we'd love to get him out, but you're gonna have to go kill him so he doesn't give information to the Viet Cong.
Right. They're like, he knows about all our major operations in Southeast Asia, so we need him assassinated because even he will break under enough torture.
Now my guess is that somehow Frank is gonna wind up rescuing him, but
Right.
We shall see. Unless this is like a alternate history and he's just going to blow his head off.
But for those of you who are fans of Garth Ennis and his violent fare or his wartime fare, you are going to it's going to deliver to you.
I'm mixed on Garth Ennis. Sometimes I like him, sometimes I don't. I thought this was one of his better projects.
I thought so too. It reminded me of Punisher Born, which I do think is a very good project. That one ended with the fascinating quasi-supernatural, you know, like at the time left untouched thing.
Did he make a deal?
Did he make a deal with some sort of dark power where he's like so in love with war that when they send him home, he's like, I don't want the war to end. And you see this voice talking to him and he's like, I can make it so that the war does never end for you, Frank. He's like, but there has to be a sacrifice. And you see he's, like, looking at the photo of his wife and kids.
Yeah.
And the implication is he gives them up. He made a knowing choice to let that happen.
Yeah.
Now, that's messed up, but it kind of... That's the Garth Ennis take.
Yeah.
That's the Garth Ennis take.
All right. Keeping with the violence, we have Deadpool, Wolverine, World War III. This is by Joe Kelly, who's written some of the only Deadpool I ever liked. Adam Kubert, who's a really good artist. I didn't, you know, everybody knows where I feel about Deadpool. If you don't, I don't like him. I didn't hate this, and that's as much as I'm going to say. Nick?
No, I actually thought it was a really interesting story.
Strong words indeed, Randy.
Like you, I think Joe Kelly has written some of the best Deadpool, you know, maybe not my favorite.
Arguably, he was the one who kind of found the right voice for him originally.
But this is, him, Wolverine begrudgingly teaming up with Deadpool to go after a group of individuals who are doing some interesting things with metahumans, I'll say that.
Yep.
I thought Kubert's artwork was great. I like Kubert on Wolverine. I always have.
Yeah.
He's a good fit.
The jokes in here feel on point for Deadpool.
Mm-hmm. Is this indeed the third of a series of miniseries?
I think it's just
called World War III.
Just called World War III. Okay.
They just wanted to catch a title.
Okay, I thought there had actually possibly been... No, that's just what they called it, and there had been a third.
I think there's probably a tie-in to the group who are engineering things.
Okay.
But, yes. Now, it was a fun issue. I don't want to say too much more.
People who are jazzed for the upcoming movie should probably check into this.
I think this is a good comic to jump in on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of a weird one. Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace Anniversary Special. Is it 25 years?
Yeah, they're re-releasing it in theaters.
So I thought this was going to be the someone actually called and I actually told them the wrong information. I thought this was going to be all those covers they did, kind of like that other one they did for Return of the Jedi.
They like originally told they did covers that would tell the entire story of the movie through like 20 variants.
But this isn't. This is like an alternate story where Anakin comes back. Or
actually, I believe it's not alternate. It's like in between.
That's him having a dream of him.
It's a dream, of him coming.
So
back.
So it's like young Anakin. It tells basically
and Jar Jar.
Phantom Menace story in kind of quick fashion.
I believe there's supposed to be something like four vignettes in it, covering four different characters that were, you know, integral to Phantom Menace. But yeah, kind of a bit of Lost Tales kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a good issue.
We've got The Whisper Queen. This is a sequel to a book called The White Trees, which was a fantasy book that Chip Zdarsky and Chris Anka did.
Is that for Image?
It is for Image. Mm-hmm. And it feels a little saga-esque.
Yeah.
It's got the sort of the dirty-minded, the big epic stuff. That sort of it is a pair of sort of fantasy heroes who have retired. One of them is in jail, but her son has gone off and he's in danger, so she breaks out of jail to go and rescue him from the mission he's on. It's got that same sort of depth of world building and character that you expect from Saga.
Yeah.
I need to see if the World Trees trade is available because it's been a while since this came out. But it's an interesting read. And it's really nice.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for a fantasy that's a little bit different, has a little bit of raunchiness to it, that might be a good one.
It is time for DC's Spring Breakout. This is one of those 8-story anthologies, all themed around spring and the beach and
tell me one character in it who's not Batman, hopefully, who stars in this.
The Metal Men.
Okay, I like the Metal Men.
And Katana.
All right.
And Harley Quinn and King Shark.
I said one.
All right.
no, that's actually a pretty good loadout. Those are good characters.
DC actually had sort of a light offering this week, but they do have annuals, for, which is the origin of a character in Nightwing, a Harley Quinn by Erica Henderson,
who did the Squirrel Girl comics. She writes and draws it, and I was flipping through it, and it looks like a lot of fun. Like, she seems like a good fit for, like, kind of a good lighter weight Harley story.
I thought there was a couple others, but I can't remember what the other ones were. But I know there's, like, three or four annuals.
Yeah, I can't. You said Flash?
I did not say Flash. Flash was, that was one of them, yeah.
All flashy.
There is a Space Ghost number one.
Yeah, this from Dynamite, who... Wait, are they doing Thundercats, or is that different?
They're doing Thundercats as well. Thundercats they're about to be doing Johnny Quest.
Yeah, so they've got a few kind of notable throwback licenses.
So this is by David Popose, who wrote Savage Avengers, and... I forget what else he's been writing a bunch of stuff lately. Oh, the new Punisher.
Right.
And this is sort of his take on a sort of more, like, slightly grim.
More serious. Yep. But there are elements of kind of, like, adventure in there as well. And dealing with all the characters you expected out of a Space Ghost.
Yep. But you will see him, like, I'm not going to give away the whole thing, but, like, he comes down pretty hard on Brack.
Yeah,
I'm
Brack just gets saying, punched.
He does.
Yeah.
Brack gets punched in the face.
He does. He's like, I will put you in traction, basically. I believe at times, Space Ghost has been identified as a sort of space cop. Here, I believe he is identified more as a space vigilante.
Yeah.
I know that they were doing a story where who are the wacky little teen sidekicks?
Oh, the
is it Jason
Zan?
Zan?
No,
something like that.
I think that's
but
right.
I know that they like kind of worked up a story that so that they would have kind of a reason why they ended up, you know, teaming up with Space Ghost. It's not those are my partners I've always had.
Right.
This sets it up and stuff. Anyway, if you're a Space Ghost fan, this might be your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jace Jan and the Monkey
Thing. If you're a Space Ghost Coast to Coast fan, I don't know.
I don't know about that either.
Yeah, I don't think you're probably not going to be.
It's not going to vibe the same anyway.
We've now reached the point of the comics of the week where everything is bloody and dark.
Yeah.
I'm gonna just run it down here.
Okay.
We had a prelude already with vampires and Garth Ennis.
Lester of the Lesser Gods. This is Eric Powell and Lucky Yates. If you recognize that second name, it is the guy who plays Dr. Krieger in Archer.
Oh.
So the two of them wrote it. Art by Gideon Kendall. He's got kind of a nice vibe. I don't know.
Kind of a cartoony, anarchic vibe, a little bit Mad Magazine-ish.
So this comes out of a one-shot that I've never read. It gets explained in the first issue. But basically, this fry-cooked dude... He's born because his mom had sex with Odin.
Right. I've heard him described as the LARPing bastard son of Odin.
Yes. Then the apocalypse happened. The devil came to Earth, and Lester fought him. And now he is living in this sort of post-apocalyptic world. It's got the same sort of weird goofiness and toilet humor you would expect from Eric Powell, from the guy who did The Goon.
Yep.
You either know what this either sounds super good to you, or you want nothing to do with it.
Right, but I would say primarily Eric Powell fans should take note.
Yes, yeah. We have the newest issue of Barbaric. This is a series we've got. I think there's three trades of it so far.
Yep. Uh-huh.
It is a fantasy series from Vault. It is about a guy who has an axe that is a talking axe that drinks blood, and it talks to him.
But he has a curse that it enforces, I think, which is, I think he used to be a pillage and raid kind of barbarian, but now he's cursed to only use his violence for good, and so I believe the axe is kind of mockingly forcing him to always be the nice guy, even though he's going to, I guess, do it his way.
This is really nice art, too. This is it's a dollar, so if you want to sample Barbaric, this is a good way to try it out. We will have some of them on our free comic book day offerings.
Okay.
So you could pay a price of a dollar or free, depending on when you try to get it.
Right. But if you miss free comic book day, it's going to be a dollar.
It'll be a dollar. Or if you don't want to wait.
Yep.
There is a new image book called Bear Pirate Viking Queen from Sean Lewis, who is the writer of King Spawn, among other things.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to describe, but I'd say somewhere between heavy metal and slightly avant-garde.
Yeah.
But with art that looks like it was kind of like almost like Bill Sienkiewicz or other painters kind of like that.
It's got that weird abstract paintiness, yeah.
Randy, you want to take a shot at pitching it or describing it?
No, I do not. All right. Bear Pirate Viking Queen.
Right. The sign that I put up for it is I used their own solicit. I've already forgotten what it was, but I used their own solicit because it was a hard one to describe. But I think the key thing is that it's from the Kingspawn writer, and that you should look at the art and see if that is what woos you.
And then we have Distillery's newest offering from Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Rizzo.
A pretty legendary team. Yes. They did literally 100 issues of the comic 100 Bullets.
And they've done other things together, too.
Yeah, but that during the most potent era that Vertigo had, the 1990s, the era of Sandman and Preacher.
Well, their editor is Will Dennis, who also was the editor of 100 Bullets.
Yeah, that's... So this is a Western story. I heard it compared to things like The Good, the Bad, the Ugly or Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy.
It is called The Blood Brothers' Mother.
The Blood Brothers' Mother. Quite a mouthful.
It's dark. It's violent. It's very kind of gritty Old West.
Yeah, I think that actually the story gets going in issue two because like the setup is all in this issue.
Yeah, this is the setup
issue. But it is basically the basic setup is that this outlaw gets out of jail and discovers that his wife has married a priest, and the three children that are his are now being raised by this priest, and he and his outlaws decide they got to go and do something about that.
Oh, great.
Things don't go great.
Yep.
But, bloody, violent revenge, Old West.
Yeah. Or anything from the Azzarello-Rizzo team before, or Azzarello in general, probably ought to check that out.
We got a few other single issues I want to mention. Dave mentioned Vengeance of Moon Knight. Weapon X-Men number 3, which is the origin of the Femme Wolverine from, like, the 1800s.
Oh,
they do a riff on the Wolverine origin art, sort of mocking up, and it really looks good. And reveal sort of, you know, how she became this sort of rich, steampunky Wolverine.
Okay.
And then, once they do her origin...
Rich steampunk Wolverine is not something I've honestly was prepared for, yeah. No.
They have a throwdown against Onslaught and a few other familiar X-Men faces, as well as Bloodstone.
Okay.
That is
Elsa Bloodstone's papa?
Yep.
Okay.
This team of Wolverines are fighting up. This includes, like, the Lifeline tablet from Amazing Spider-Man number 68. Christos Gage loves to delve into the lore.
I guess.
There's cliff notes at the end of about each thing at the end of the issue. This is super fun. I'm actually really enjoying this miniseries.
Randy, since you brought it up, Vengeance of Moon Knight 5, I wanted to note, it is the first Blood Hunt tie-in, and that's a book that Jed McKay's been writing for a while.
Yep.
I think we both really liked this issue.
It's really good.
It actually, the Blood Hunt tie-in is not super vital, but it does involve a major character in it.
Yep.
But it also is kind of finished a character's arc, the arc of the initial threat, I guess you would say, in the series. And had some really interesting developments with the kind of loser villain who he's been reforming sort of under him and who's been sort of seeing a therapist about it. And his therapy session is chronicled in this. And in the therapy session, he talks about, like, what it's like to have Moon Knight as your foe. And it's, like, just a little bit meta, but he talks about, like, it was very cool. He's like, he is incredibly scary. Like, people know that how out there he can get. But he's like, it's also pretty cool to be able to say Moon Knight's your foe.
So
I was like, oh, this is a really well-written villain here.
We also have Sons of Star Trek number 2, which I want to mention. Dave, I keep trying to get you to read the IDW Star Trek books.
True, I haven't done it.
You keep not doing it. You would like this one, too. This is the sons. Sons mentioned are Jake Sisko, Nog...
Yep.
Alexander
Worf's son
coming off a very big plot development in the Blood War, whatever that Klingon crossover was with the other two, and Q Jr., who I gather maybe showed up in Voyager. They reference it here like Q Jr. showed up in Voyager.
Is that what they're calling him? Q Jr.
QJ is what they call him.
Okay. I know that Q showed in some episodes of Voyager. I don't recall the son, but like I remember there was an episode where he was looking for a mate.
So he is trying to take a different tack. He explains this in this issue. Basically, he's like my father was sort of a judge trying to, you know, take to look at humanity as the judge, jury, executioner. He's like, think of me as a social worker. I want to help you with your problems before they become bigger issues.
That sounds
so. So he's using his godlike powers. So they
next
are
level Q.
So the three of them are on a starship that is in an alternate universe.
Uh-huh.
This alternate universe ship is commanded by the Cardassian Gul Dukat.
Yep.
That's
not a nice man.
It includes Tuvix.
Oh wow!
As their science officer.
Oh jeez.
And they are at war with the Breen.
Okay.
And they're in a time loop where the Breen keeps wiping out their ship. Also,
it's funny because those
Jadzia Dax is also there, but she was never bonded with Curzon.
Oh, interesting. These are some deep cuts. Like
yes.
The Breen. I don't want to say too much about this, but they play a notable role in the Dominion War.
Yep.
And, of course, they're currently being featured in Star Trek Discovery. They have an increasingly large role in what will be the last season.
Yep.
And Tuvix was literally one episode of Voyager, but it's the moral quandary it presented is like, sort of so divisive, people still talk about it to this day.
So they're using all this. Also, by the way, Morn is a crew member.
Morn, oh, wow. How do they show him talking or not?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, I was like...
A little bit.
Morn was the visual parody of Norm from Cheers.
Yep.
He was an alien who was essentially always at the bar at Quark's. A fun character, but like they always kind of got around like showing him talk in the show.
But they're trying to convince...
That's a bunch of good
also,
ingredients.
Do you know who the engineer on this ship is?
Who is the engineer?
Shaw.
Shaw. Oh, shit. The dipshit from Chicago, Shaw?
Yeah.
Nice.
This references everything from Picard to Deep Space Nine.
Man, that is...
And in a way where I never felt lost. I feel like it's little extra layers of like,
right,
oh,
probably if you
it's
didn't
that
know
guy,
every single one of you,
yeah,
still enjoy it.
But
yeah,
if you get all the references, it's especially cool.
That is very cool.
It's a super fun book. The IDW Star Trek books are so good, and I think not enough people know how good they are. This is excellent. I'm really enjoying it as sort of an alternate. I also like alternate timeline stuff.
Yeah.
So this is right up my alley.
Yeah.
And then I want to mention Dr. Seuss graphic novel, Cat Out of Water.
This is another super horrible, violent one, right?
Yes. This is by Art Balthasar, who did Teen Titans, or Tiny Titans.
Tiny Titans. He's a really talented, like, kind of... He does kid-friendly superhero comics and things like that. And so he does seem like he's a good fit to do kind of continued Dr. Seuss stories.
Yeah.
He's doing the Cat in the Hat here, but I know he's also going to do one with...
Grinch, I think?
The Grinch, I
Grinch
think,
Takes
yeah.
a Vacation, yes. This reminds me of sort of what I like about like Dog Man. It's goofy and fun. The premise is very good. It is basically the Cat in the Hat has come to this kid's house numerous times. The fish is like, don't let him in. Turn off the lights. Don't let him work here. And the Cat in the Hat keeps letting him in because he's fun.
Yeah.
But then he makes a mess. And this particular one, he decides that they should all try being fish, and he floods the house.
Randy, if I'm not mistaken, this is not written in the rhyming style of Dr. Seuss.
It is not
as a comic.
It is a comic.
Yeah. But it's a nice little hardcover digest-y kind of size thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a nice production. Like the art looks really good in it.
It's a super fun read. If you have kids, if they like Cat in the Hat, or if you like Cat in the Hat,
this would be an awesome way to introduce
you. This is
to get them into some comic stuff. Too.
There's also a little bit of how to draw in the back. You say how to draw Cat in the Hat, how to draw the goldfish, how to draw the kids.
Awesome.
This is a really nice little package. It's another one of these like $10 kind of hardcover things. Again, if you're doing like Dog Man and that kind of stuff, this is a really nice
edition. Natural inclusion.
Yeah. All right, that's comics for the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the Free Comic Book Day offerings and the trailer for My Adventures with Superman. Before we get to talking about the Free Comic Book Day offerings for this year, we want to talk about the trailer that just dropped for My Adventures with Superman Season 2.
Yep.
We all talked about we talked about that numerous times, how much we all love season one. I did not know season two was going to drop like a surprise like this.
It's not out, is it?
No, but it's coming out May 25th.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They gave it, like, here it is. It'll be out in 3 weeks.
We all liked season one, right?
Love
season one
was great.
I think it's kind of cool that between, you know, like DC, I feel like that's their best animated thing right now.
Yeah.
Although there's probably... I don't know if they're still doing Young Justice, but they have a lot of good stuff
yep,
still.
Yep.
And then Marvel's killing it with X-Men 97.
Yep.
Nice to have some competition.
It's good.
Everybody's doing a good job.
So this trailer, it's just a sizzle trailer. We don't get a lot of sense of the story, but we know leaving off that basically, like, Brainiac's involved.
Yep.
General Zod is involved.
Yeah. Lex is formerly working, it looks like, for
Waller.
Waller, yep. Seems like.
And
Lex was good in the first season.
Yeah, but he wasn't. They never named him.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he just said. I think they called him Alex or Alexander or something like that.
Yeah.
So they were a little bit coy about it.
But it's a good new take on Lex.
Yeah. He's like an Elon Musk type, right?
Yeah. Looks like it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought he was like working for like an Elon Musk type.
Oh, maybe he was.
And then that guy like burned him hardcore, and it looks like that kind of was his supervillain origin, was being like burned by Elon Musk.
I thought he was working for the guy who became Parasite.
That's who's that? It's another mad scientist type.
Yeah, dude. I thought
like Teal Morrow.
Yeah,
one of those
something
dudes.
Like that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He was, but again, I think that guy kind of threw him under the bus or never fully appreciated him.
Yeah.
And I think he's kind of like, I could do better than that.
Yeah. At any rate, this trailer shows there's some teaser bits of we saw Supergirl in there. I think I saw Sam Lane running along with
I was wondering who that was.
I'm pretty sure it was Sam Lane.
Yeah.
Remember, didn't he find out at the end in the finale, like he came to dinner because Lois and Clark were dating, and then he found out that she was Superman, and like the parents kind of got into it.
As I recall, I think Mrs. Kent was like, if he starts talking shit about my boy at dinner, he's like, I will shut him down. Very fun.
But also we see a host of villains like Livewire.
Yeah.
It looked like Atomic Skull.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
Continuing to do the anime thematics and vibe that has been the hallmark of this series.
Yeah.
Including at one point that I think Jimmy had the sort of cutesy anime face.
Yep.
Which, by the way, one of the funnest scenes they did in the first season was when did they get promoted to like sort of official journalists or whatever?
Yeah.
But I remember like even jerky Steve Lombard was like very happy for his buddy Jimmy.
Yes.
And got the little anime cutesy face and stuff like that. Yeah. It has been every episode of that has been super fun, and so I have no reason to believe this season two will be any less.
So I'm doing the math here.
Yep.
We've got three episodes left of X-Men 97.
Yep.
That will be the 1st, the 8th, and the 15th, which
just
means
in time to get us.
We
to
will only have like it'll be on the 22nd. We'll be like, where's my X-Men? And then 3 days later, Superman.
Nice.
So nice. It'll pick up the torch.
We only have to wait, 2 years for the second season of X-Men?
God, that's so much longer than I want it to be.
I mean, I'm joking. I bet it's going to be sooner.
We'll get the second season of Star Trek Prodigy.
Yeah, that's true.
And there should be, I'm sure there's some other cool animation stuff going on. We'll get the live action One Piece somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is also kind of like a cartoon.
All right, let's run down the Free Comic Book Day offerings here. We've got a big stack of them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to necessarily run through every single thing, but I sort of arranged them for us in the order of things I think we would be interested in talking about.
Yeah.
First up, and I feel like we got a fair amount of this, but I also think this is one that could go before middle of the day.
Yeah.
It's always good to remind you, Free Comic Book Day, you have a choice. You can be here early, get in line, wait in line for maybe an hour, really take part in the fun of it all. And but you will wait in line. You'll have to wander through and have the best selection available to you. Or you can wait until like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Things will have died down. But we will be out of comics.
Right.
Not out of comics entirely.
Yeah, I was going to say not entirely.
We will be out of some of the comics you might have wanted.
Right.
So if you have a specific thing you want to be early.
Yeah.
If you just want some free comics, we'll have them until we close probably.
Yep. But I think, the best bet for selection-wise is to maybe hit us before 1.
Before noon, you want to be here at 11.
It's only gonna be a few indies that'll go out before then.
We'll see. Anyway, this will be
let the people sleep in. Randy.
We ordered a fair amount. I'm gonna sleep in. Why should they?
Oh, that's a good point. You better get up early, punks.
This is one that I think we ordered a fair amount, but at the time we didn't know quite how big it was gonna be, and so I'm not sure how long it will last. But Energon Universe, as you all know, we're all excited about the Energon Universe,
right? Which includes the G.I. Joe stuff and the Transformer stuff.
Yep. And also Void Rivals.
Void Rivals stuff. Yeah.
That's so Transformer stuff.
This has three stories in it. There's a Transformer story written by Daniel Warren Johnson with art by Invincible artist Ryan Ottley. There is a Void Rivals story by Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo DeFelice, who's the original regular creative team, that introduces another Transformer into the Void Rivals universe.
Which is awesome.
It's kind of a notable one.
Yeah, it's a very notable one.
And then there's a G.I. Joe story by Joshua Williamson and Jason Howard. Jason Howard, you might know, is the guy who did the art on Super Dinosaur. For Kirkman.
And Astounding Wolfman.
And Astounding Wolfman. both of which I think might be out of print, but I'm sure they'll be coming back in.
I thought it was a good fit for...
It was. These are all good stories. They're short, but they're all notable.
Every one of them delivers on something that if you have been reading this book, that you are going to be like, oh, cool, they explained blank, or, you know, it's an appearance by blank. Mm-hmm. They really pay off, all of them.
It honestly feels kind of like the start of the next chapter. Yeah.
We're finishing up the miniseries, and this is the next chapter. Yeah.
And some very large and notable things are happening.
If you missed this on Free Comic Book Day, we will have the paid version available of it in a few weeks.
Yep.
So don't distress that you will not be able to get these stories. You will. But if you want to get the earliest look at it, Free Comic Book Day, this is the big one.
Get up early, just like Randy is.
And it has an awesome Megatron cover.
It has an awesome Megatron cover. Boom did a smart thing. They're doing the Worlds of James Tynion IV. If you don't know James Tynion, we've talked a lot about him on this podcast.
But in particular, he kind of is owning the horror genre these days.
Yeah, for sure.
And,
but this is focusing on three of his
This is
projects.
Three things he's done for Boom across probably 10 years.
Yeah.
Something's Killing the Children, which is still running. Mimetic, which is a thing about like the horror of ideas loosed in the world, which actually is out of print, but will be coming back in print. And then The Woods, which I think was a Lost Kids kind of thing.
Yep.
Which is also going to get it. We've got that in collections.
I've never read that one, but I wanted to.
There is a deluxe edition coming soon. So if you're liking Something's Killing the Children, this is a good chance to sample other James Tynion stuff.
You know what's interesting about Tynion is like the way he kind of put in his time.
He did.
Right? And so like The Woods came out and like, you know, it doesn't like explode or anything like that. He did Batman and detective stuff for a few years.
Yep.
They did good, but not amazing. But now that he's like kind of hit a saturation point and his horror stuff in particular caught on, there's like renewed appreciation for those early projects, which seems were also good. It's just that people, not as many eyes were on
him. He's prolific. I just reread all his Detective Comics stuff that he did that was really good.
Yep.
Because at the time, I think we were like, oh, it's Scott Snyder's protege.
Right. We thought he'd just be his little sidekick who wouldn't amount to anything.
Yep.
And Detective, I remember, was kind of the turning point where we sort of started taking note of him. We're like, oh, you know what? He's pretty good.
Yeah.
What else we got?
DC has 4 books on offer. Yes, they do.
Wow.
Absolute Power, which is a preview of their summer event. That's going to be written by Mark Waid with art by Dan Mora. You know we all love Dan Mora. But this one is actually the art is by Mikkel Jenin, who is also a very good artist.
He's been fantastic in
and
everything he
this
does.
This is basically 3 villains of the DC Universe coming together to try and strip powers from them, from the superheroes. This is a prologue story, an original story, and then also the first 3 pages of Absolute Power number 1, which goes on sale in July, are previewed in here as well.
Oh, nice.
There are a couple of their all ages. There is Barda by Ngozi Okazu.
It's from that like YA style graphic
novels
they do.
Yeah, it's like in their Teen Titan or the Raven Loves Beast Boy.
She did the hockey book Check Please.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's an Austin local, by the way. This is her story of Barda, Big Barda.
But like pre her kind of like earthly adventures, this is her working, being at Granny Goodness's orphanage.
Yep,
but this is also where she meets Scott Free.
Yes.
Okay, so it's the tough early days and early love of Barda and Scott.
It looks really cool.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yehudi Mercado, another Austin local artist, has Barkham Asylum, which you probably know what that sounds like, and that is indeed... Joker's Hyenas versus Ace the Bat Hound.
That sounds very fun.
Yep. Also, I believe there's a cat that's either that's Catwoman or Riddler's cat.
Okay.
And I
can
believe
see Riddler having a cat.
It might be a Riddler cat. But yeah, it's them teaming up.
You know what the Riddler cat should be like? Riddle me this. Where's my food?
We got the Mad Magazine thing, which is notable because it's a lot of Kerry Callan stuff. Kerry Callan, Dave and I have been talking about him for years.
He does great superhero parodies, but this also includes a lot of classic parodies from the past. So, like, if you know Sergio Aragonés.
Yep.
It's got his stuff from him. It's got Don Martin, who, one of the true heroes of Mad Magazine. These guys have been spoofing superheroes for years. Mad has always had like a big compilation of of talent in there. There's some very funny stuff in this.
And it's all superhero parodies from various places.
You know what I really liked? The extremely well-drawn, Sergio Aragonés does these cartoony characters, but he can draw really detailed if he wants. there's like a little four-pager thing where Superman is stopped. There's somebody tied to the train tracks, and you see him land, and he puts his hands forward, and the train is just about to hit. And then you flip the page, and there's this massive splash page of this horrible derailment. Everybody in the train, like hundreds of people being smashed comically. And he saved, like, the one dude.
Also, this does have a Mad Folden at the back, for those of you who know.
Is there a Spy versus Spy?
There is a Spy versus Spy. A superhero-themed Spy versus Spy.
For the record, I don't know if that was by him, but Al Jaffe, the guy who did them, Folden's, died in the last couple of years, I want to say.
Yeah.
And so getting that's a little tribute to him, too.
Yeah. Now I'm curious to see if it says Al Jaffe's name on it. I don't think it does. I think somebody, writer and artist, Al Jaffe.
Okay, there you go.
So it's a lot of classic Matt stuff. That's awesome. It looks very cool.
The Jaffe is back.
Has a very funny Carrie Kellen cover.
Yes.
We've got Marvel has...
Four offerings?
Five offerings.
Five offerings.
One of which is technically a Disney universe.
You know what? It used to be every company did one. Yep. And Marvel and DC being kind of big would sort of do two. Like kind of one for the grown-ups and one for the kids. And now they're, like, really trying to outdo each other. Like, you do four, we'll do five.
What's kind of fun is, in addition to the stories, they have house ads throughout this to sort of give you a sense. So if you haven't been reading comics for a while, it'll give you a sense of, oh, here's what's coming up, and here's some stuff I might want to get.
Yeah.
Right.
The Marvel, one of them is the Blood Hunt series. So this is a Blood Hunt prelude. This is an original story. It's by Jed MacKay with art by Sarah Pacelli.
Yep.
And it takes place basically, what...
Pre-sun death, or right at sun death, whatever.
And has some notable stuff. Like
I was gonna say, there's notable things in
it's
there.
It's a big thing.
Like some things that aren't in the first issue.
Right.
So I'm sure this will be included in the collection.
In the collection, yeah.
But if you are picking up like the first issue this week, well, you should also come in on Free Comic Book Day and get this kind of tie-in prequel.
This is also a notable thing because it features X-Men.
It's the first post-Krakoa X-Men. That's about to get a big relaunch. This is Uncanny X-Men by Simone and David Marquez.
Yep.
And this is them. And I don't think... This is, again, a little eight-pager story.
Yeah, a little vignette.
Probably will not be in the first issue. This is its own thing. Jubilee-focused. And I thought a really good story. I really enjoyed it. So
yeah,
it bodes well for the upcoming X-Men relaunch.
It kind of gives you a sense of where mutants are in the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
And a new villain.
Yep.
There's the Spider-Man book, which has a Amazing Spider-Man story by Zeb Wells and Ryan Stegman, the regular creative team, and the first look at the new Ultimates, which is previewed in here.
Who's doing Ultimates? It's Hickman and...
So, yes, but this is not by them.
Oh, okay.
This is by Denise Camp and Juan Frigeri.
Oh, okay.
Just sort of a little teaser, maybe a roster change.
Yeah.
And then there is a little Venom story. Because there's a book coming out called Venom War.
Venom story, not Little Venom.
No, story. A Little Venom story.
Got it.
Not Lil Venom.
Just making sure.
Starring Lil Venom.
Not Lil Venom, not Kid Venom, regular Venom.
The rapper Lil Venom.
Lil Venom.
Venom.
Then there's a Star Wars book that has a story where the rebels go back to Echo Base to go see they maybe have left some people behind in the evacuation. And is very notable to me for having Lando in a snow outfit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so, Hoth is something they basically, once they left Hoth, they were done with it. But were they? We find out, perhaps not.
And
you know, somebody would be funny, Princess Leia was like, I think I left my car keys in the hangar. They're like, oh, shit.
I love the space oven on.
That's right. Written by Charles Soule, who's written a lot of Star Wars.
Gonna start a fire on Hoth.
And then there's a backup Darth Vader story by Greg Pak, who's written a lot of the Darth Vader stuff.
Those are two fairly notable
stories.
That's
a lot of good stuff. That seems very appropriate because it is May 4th, so to have a good Star Wars outing.
I guess probably why there's five books.
Nice to have, yeah.
There's also Marvel Voices. They do these every year. This one is focused on a Spider-Hero character. So there's a Spider-Man India story, a Spider-Gwen story, and another Spider-Man who seems to be the maybe the character from the video game or a version of him.
Okay.
And then Gambit. There's a Gambit story.
Okay.
That's cool. Plus Cajun.
And then there's the all-ages Spidey and his amazing friends. This is the sort of like big head.
Yeah, they look like fun all-ages.
Yeah. Dave, you said that you gave a look through this one.
Yeah, it's very fun. There's...
I believe Spider-Gwen is referred to as Ghosty.
Yes. This is a great kind of first thing to be showing kids who are like superheroes, but you don't want to quite jump ahead to... you know, the death of Gwen Stacy.
My niece and nephew watch this.
This is superheroes as like fun friends.
Yep. This is a show on Disney Junior, so yep. This is a riff on that.
Yep.
Dark Horse has a Hellboy Stranger Things book. And then we've come to the licensed books. There's a whole lot of licensed stuff. I just kind of put it all together here and I'll run through it. The folks that brought you Dick Tracy have a new Flash Gordon book.
Okay.
With art by Will Conrad. Very, very beautiful book. I don't know if you all saw this one.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out because I love Flash Gordon and, like, old sort of pulp takes
on
it.
And if it's as popular as the Dick Tracy sold out. I mean, yeah, it's really fast. Yeah,
that's true.
So.
Dynamite has a Johnny Quest number 0. Again, beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
Written by Joe Casey. Huh? This is a new story from them, a number 0. And then in the back, preview pages from Thundercats number 1 and Space Ghost number 1.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Mad Cave is doing Gatchaman, a.k.a. Battle of the Planets.
Yep. A.k.a. G-Force.
A.k.a. G-Force.
Which, in short, that was a big 70s era anime.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Gen X people like me and Randy might have watched it. I know I did. I don't know if you did, Randy.
I never did.
But I was all over it. You know, they kind of fall on that, I think, Super Sentai kind of thing. They're teenage superhero sorts, but in kind of a... What I always felt like was like maybe like it's meant to be like 100 years in the future, and they fight villains who create giant robots and stuff to take over the Earth.
It's very Voltron.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, and happy to see those guys around.
Well, this one has three stories in it. The creators include Cullen Bunn, Chris Bautista, Tommy Lee Edwards, and Steve Orlando. All pretty notable names.
Yeah,
very pretty looking. We got a Popeye number 1.
Yep,
from Massive Publishing.
I didn't have a chance to read this, but the fun thing that it looked like it had to me in it is Popeye taking on a character who looks like basically he's a Dragon Ball Z-esque character.
Yeah,
and so you get these both like ridiculous powerhouses who are kind of cartoonish, but people have wanted to see who's the big guy in
Goku?
Goku like take on Superman and stuff like that before. This is a kind of a version of that. So,
yeah, that's true. That's fun.
And nice art. Really nice art.
It was. The cartooning is good. It's like kind of modern but still like, you know, has the fun cartooniness of Popeye.
Udon offers up Street Fighter versus Final Fight. First time we've matched these two things together. IDW is doing Monster High. I don't know a lot about this, but I know this is a very popular doll series.
Yeah, they're kind of like the little alt Barbies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This is Titan has Conan, Battle of the Black Stone. Nice new sampler story for their Conan license.
Cool.
Dynamite produces the first full issue of Maleficent. That's Disney's Maleficent.
That's a very fun book, and then you're getting like the whole first issue.
Titan also has the new Doctor Who. The Shutigatwa version of Doctor Who.
Yep.
Written by Dan Waters, who's doing Six Fingers, I believe, Image.
Yeah.
And some other stuff. If you like manga, there's some manga offerings. There is, of course, a Pokemon Splatoon split book. There is a Far Cry book based on one of the Far Cry... Dave, you said this is one of
those... I believe it's the one that's about the rebellion in their analog to Cuba.
Okay.
That's, like, set in modern times.
Is it the one that has Giancarlo Esposito?
He's the big bad.
Oh, is he in that one?
He's the big bad, yeah. All right. It's so fun, by the way. That game is so fun. Ridiculous. I don't know what the anime covers in it, but it looks like it's a dive into, like, kind of the lore of the local population and sort of, like, some of, the, like, their native beliefs and there's notably a series of missions in the game where you deal with the lore of the island, which, again, probably somewhat analogous to their sort of native population of Cuba was. Anyway, good stuff.
Kodansha has Initial D, which also is a preview of Kina of the Great Snow Sea, which is a manga that's come out later this year by Sotomi Nihai, the guy who did Blame and then Wolverine Snicked.
And Initial D is like he's like a getaway driver or something, right?
Yes, but this Kina of the Great Snow Sea thing is a sort of environmental post-apocalyptic thing. A lot of snow and cool stuff like that.
Huh.
And it's all cool looking, black and white. But then Initial D is, yes, it is a guy who's like a driver who is a tofu delivery driver, and I believe he joins a street racing team.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we noticed that this We've little story is all road. In color.
It's really nice. It kind of has this chill watercolor look.
I never read Initial D, but it always sounded kind of cool.
And it's been out of print for a while. Kodansha just put this nice big omnibus of it back in print. So if you like that, we will have Volume 1 in the store. Viz did a One Piece Aces story, which is, I believe, one of his brothers. And then also it's a flip book with a book called Status Royale, which is another another Viz manga. And then a Blaze manga has Cannibal, which is a story that is streaming on Hulu. I don't know a lot about it, but it seems to be about cannibals.
Classic cannibals.
If you like all ages stuff, boy, do we got all ages stuff. There is the Snoopy Beagle Scout Adventures.
Adorable.
There's the Boombox Sampler, which has Lumberjanes, Giant Days, Zawa, and Midas.
Okay.
There is Unico Awakening. This is Scholastic's offering. A full-color reimagining of Osamu Tezuka, the god of manga.
Oh, yeah.
A young unicorn who is banished from the heavens. Really nice full-color artwork on this one. And the graphic novel for it, I believe, comes out in August.
Nice.
There's Phoebe and her unicorn, which if you have kids, you know what Phoebe and your unicorn is.
Double unicorns.
Investigators, which right. is another fun one.
Yeah, I think folks getting like Dogman and stuff like that will often cross over and get the Investigators.
An asterisk for a sort of classic, if you know Asterisk the Gaul, right?
Yeah, is that a French comic?
Belgian?
Belgian, sure.
Oh, France, you're right.
Okay.
Dave's right, he's France. Dark Horse has the Star Wars Young Jedi Adventures, which is a very cute-looking Jedi book.
Yeah, again, we're getting into that sort of little Funko Pop style of heroes and stuff.
And it also has a Plants vs. Zombies, which is always popular. Nickelodeon and Paper Cuts did something called The Loud House, which I had not heard of, but Dave, you said, looks like it maybe was a...
I mean, overall, I'm not sure what the vibe of it is. I feel like it's one of those, like... Oh my god! I'm gonna completely blank it. I'm not Steven Universe, but
like Grim and Mandy and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's like that. But I did see that they play like there's like a family that plays like I think a role playing game in it.
Yeah.
And in the back last few pages, they just have like these very simple 2 or 3 page rules so that you can kind of play the role playing game too,
which is pretty neat.
I thought that was cool.
Then there's an oversized thing from Paper Cuts that is a flipbook for Turning Red, the Pixar movie.
Yeah.
And Encanto, the super popular Disney movie.
Yeah, it looked really good. I like the art on those.
Those are getting new graphic novels later this year, so this is like their sampler. Archie Horror does The Cursed Library, which seems to be sort of a post-apocalyptic Cthulhu-type thing set in the Archie universe. Fallout Boy's Pete Wentz writes a sort of teen angst horror book called Dying Inside for Vault. Really pretty artwork on this one.
Yeah, it's nice.
The people who did Kill Shakespeare have Romeo versus Juliet.
Nice.
Then there's a few random ones. 10-ton comics, Tons of Strange is an indie book. A superhero book called Ultra Duck.
Yep.
Fantagraphics has stories from the Atlas Comics Library, which is all these weird... were Marvel before it was Marvel.
Right, but it's kind of like... It looks like their answer to EC's horror comics.
Yeah, horror, military...
yeah.
Romance. Dave, you and I both follow this page that's like pages out of context.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them came from this.
Absolutely.
Some sort of outrageous, but also some really beautiful artwork on these.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there's American Mythology doing the Cursed Verse, which is their original sort of pulp adventure universe. Valiant has another shot at the Valiants, their team book. And there is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a new called Night Watcher, maybe a new turtle character.
Okay.
I believe that is everything.
Yeah, that's a good loadout, y'all.
That's a great loadout.
But as always, in addition to the new stuff, we always have stuff from previous years. So if you missed some stuff, like, I don't know if you heard, there was no Sonic this year. We'll probably have some Sonic.
Yep.
We'll have some other properties that didn't get released this year. We try to have a good selection.
Let me ask, I don't know if we've actually determined this, but do we know if we're going to be able to do, like, 5?
We usually do up to 10 per person.
Yeah.
That's where we'll usually start.
5 is, like, was our bare minimum these days.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm guessing 10 is going to be the number this year. So you can load up.
Another reason to come early, because we start at 10.
Yep.
And if we start to the point of, like, oh, we need to scale it back to 5, that'll happen later in the day. And we want to make sure everybody gets a chance at
them.
So come out early. I know if you don't like lines and stuff, but come out of the line. Talk to the people in the line. You're all there. You all love comics.
Right.
This should be a big day for everybody.
Or Star Wars.
Star Wars
people. And you know what you could do is you could go get some Round Rock donuts afterwards.
Yes. What I recommend, if you're talking to people in line, some best practices.
Yep.
Do not ask who's your favorite character and then trash talk their character.
Right.
Don't ask if Superman would beat the Hulk. Don't start that. Just have some fun discussions about what you like.
Yes.
And then ask about what they like.
Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, that's going to be fun. For those who haven't been out to Free Comic Book Day before, while it's a little chaotic, it's very manageable, and it's like...
It ain't Black Friday.
Right, and the energy is super positive and fun, and like it's always a good day.
Yeah, it's one of our favorite days of the year. We always have a great time. We work really hard at it. It's a long day, but we'll have a great time, and we're hoping to see you all out there.
Are we also going to be... are we launching or is just setting up...
We are officially launching the Reading Challenge for the year.
The Reading Challenge is the Kids Reading Challenge.
Kids Reading Challenge. You can get a packet if you want. We have 60 packets.
Yep.
If we wind up running out, we'll get more, but we have flyers that will give you the details on it. So you can either start that day or like make a note to, we'll come back next week and let's get a packet and learn some stuff. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's the other thing we're doing. So... Yeah, come on out. Come to Free Comic Book Day. It'll be a lot of fun. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about X-Men 97?
Sure.
All right. All right, as is our usual, we're going to talk about the latest episode of X-Men 97. Spoilers, if you've not seen it. What's wrong with you? Why aren't you watching it on Wednesdays like everybody else?
Yeah, watch it Wednesday or kind of technically, not technically, but Tuesday night, stay up late.
At 2 a.m., that's when Dave and I will both be watching
it. Yeah. Is it actually always on at 2 or is it sometimes 3?
I thought it was 2.
I thought it was 2.
Okay. I feel like I waited one time and it didn't come on until freaking 3.
If it goes to 3, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to have to get up early and watch it.
All right, don't.
I try to
wuss out,
Randy. And next week, to tomorrow, I'm going to be here all day. I can't get up early and then come in later. I'll get up early.
That's why you wake up earlier.
And we're about to hit the beginning of the 3 episodes that's like we know it's kind of a multi-part finale.
Yep.
So it's going to be big stuff, I'm sure.
This episode was the epilogue, basically, to the fallout from episode 5.
Correct. A.K.A. the destruction of Genosha.
And
or
death of Gambit.
The near destruction of Genosha, anyway.
And Magneto.
Yeah.
Maybe. But not really.
This begins with an amazing eulogy from Nightcrawler.
It was so good.
Yeah, it was really good.
From a kid's cartoon. I'm like, man, that was a great eulogy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not unlike what they gave the dialogue for Magneto. They gave Kurt, like, an amazing...
You know what's cool? Kurt's an obvious guy to do it, but you'd think, oh, Nightcrawler, he's going to Jesus it up.
And he didn't.
But he didn't. He used this, like, card metaphors and stuff like that. Yeah. And he was saying how, like, you know, that Gambit seemed like a person who, like, what, wasn't living up to his potential or might have thought that.
Yep.
But he's like, I think he was bluffing. And I was like, he was the master of the bluff. And I was like, oh, what a cool way to lens it.
He used the card metaphor and Gambit's potential energy powers. It was very cool metaphor stuff.
Yeah, I was like, I need him to write a eulogy for me when I die tomorrow.
And then they threw in...
Fighting a big Sentinel.
Then they threw in some Gambit. Characters that they gave Belladonna was
swamp,
there.
The swamp people were there.
Well, his brother. And it was a nice
little... You mean they were just at the funeral?
Yeah, they were at the funeral. Yeah. It was cool.
But that was good.
Well, and there was a woman I thought was Rogue. But she wasn't Rogue, because Rogue was off doing some other stuff.
Yes. Somebody was like, who was it who noticed? Jubilee,
and she's kind of mad about it.
She's like, how could Rogue be so rude as to not be here? And the thing is, it's too much for Rogue to deal with. She has to take some action.
Doesn't Wolverine say we all deal with, like,
he does.
Pain in our own ways? Yeah.
And she deals with it by kicking some ass.
Yeah,
Rogue is just wrecking shit. Yeah. Yep. And
who's she going after? Trask?
She's going after Trask. She wants to know what happened.
Yeah, how did this Sentinel thing happen?
Which goes back to them trying to find him in the first episode.
Yep.
And she goes to Gyrich, and I love when Gyrich is being all smug, and he's like, you're not gonna your mind witches, and I'm like, you don't know what's gonna happen. She's gonna absorb you. Like, she's gonna take your memories. Like, Rogue on a Rampage was pretty great.
It was a lot of fun.
Well, we see Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah, he's like, he's thinking nobody's getting in there.
Yeah.
He's like, he says at one point, he's like, this was built to contain the Hulk.
Right.
Yeah. The first of these episodes references to people who are not X-Men, other Marvel characters.
Yep.
But not the last, because we will shortly see Rogue run into Captain America.
Captain America, but not the real Captain America, because that guy was fake. I believe it was Jack. It was Johnny Walker or Jack. Whatever.
He is a little bit more on the law and order side of things than
sold out my boy Cap.
But Captain America has shown up in X-Men Animated before. It was in a flashback with Wolverine.
Okay.
Was it that Wolverine Black Widow story?
Kind of.
Okay. But anyway, they don't get along. He and Rogue are at odds a bit.
So here's the thing. I thought he gave her the information. Yeah. He does give her the information. He's like, I'm about to go to Mexico City. That's where I've heard Guy Rich is. And then he's like, stand down. We can't go until I get authorization. Which Cap isn't stupid. He knows full well they're going to move Guy Rich before they get there.
Yeah.
So I liked, my thought was, okay, so he's giving Rogue the information even though he can't give the information to her.
Right.
But that's not how they played it. They played it like he was telling her to stand down. I didn't like that.
What if they later had them run into each other again and he's like, I'm glad you got the information.
I'm glad you got the message, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they're gonna.
Maybe not, because, yeah.
And then she, like,
this is pretty sly.
And then she takes a shield and throws it over the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah. it's quite the bird flip.
It's another bit of good dialogue where he's like, if your hands are tied, you don't need this. But I'm like, Cap would never say his hands are tied. Cap started civil war. Over what was right.
Oh, are we using Mark Miller's Cap as a gauge of
the movie Civil War? Not the bad Civil War, the good Civil War.
Oh, okay.
Not one of the many bad Civil Wars, the only good one. Anyway, I was not crazy about that because I'm also a big Cap fan and I thought they sold him out a little bit. But I get they were using him as a stand-in for, like, American imperialism and the centrist agenda and that kind of thing. I just don't like Cap being used for that role.
Right. You want Cap who teams up with him.
Yeah. But it was cool seeing him, and it was cool seeing Rogue then wreck Mexico City's detention facility.
Yep.
And then they're using a villain who I don't know very well.
Yeah. Well, he was very prominent in the 90s.
Are we going to say what his name is?
Yeah.
It's Bastion. I don't know anything about him.
So his big thing was he was a human sentinel, right?
No, it's even weirder than that. Okay, if you really want to know.
Yeah, I'm curious.
So he is...
Is he a Nimrod?
He is Nimrod, who was made into a human by the Siege Perilous.
Oh, right, that's right.
What's the Siege Perilous?
It's the same thing that caused the X-Men to be invisible to cameras and all that when they were reborn after Fall of the Mutants.
I don't know what that was. Like, is this an energy, a person?
It's a King Arthur thing.
Yeah. Right, I know it's like the chair from King Arthur times.
No, this was like a mirror and you go through it and it changes you.
Okay. Yeah, and he believed he was a human until he realized he was Nimrod.
So it's like a human.
They're clearly doing something slightly different with him.
A little bit.
They probably won't use Siege Perilous. They might.
I mean, you never know.
But the other thing that he invented was the human sentinel. Basically, the sort of like human, the sentinels would emerge from a human
Sentinel Prime,
and they would become their and.
Does it, like, infect a regular person and that person becomes a sentinel?
I believe that was the deal.
From what I
kind of like how Agent Smith takes over people in the Matrix?
Well, from what I remember, he would reanimate dead bodies.
Yes.
Turn them into kind of sleeper agents kind of thing.
Yeah. They're taking out here is creepy and really effective.
Yeah,
When Rogue drops Trask, and Morph is like, wow, we're just doing this? Warren's like, hell yeah, we're doing this. I was all about that. I'm like, yeah. I mean, she did catch him, and then she let him go.
Yep.
But I was like, oh, that's pretty hardcore. And then he, like, floats back up. I'm like, oh, the day was going to use that to show how... And then he, like, tilts his head around Exorcist style.
Well, and then he, like, takes out the X-Men one by one.
He wrecks them, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Yeah.
And the show continues
to do that thing where it's like, yes, it's drawing on all these stories we've seen before, but it's combining them in ways that I never know what's going to happen next.
And then Cable shows up with a way to shut down Human Sentinels because he's been fighting them.
Yep.
Very cool. For a second, I thought it was Forge. My first thought was Cable, then I thought Forge, then it was Cable.
We didn't get the his Cable music.
No, But now, and then, of course, they did Cyclops Now Knows That's His Son.
Correct.
I thought that was done well.
There's also a lot of little small things. We get Emma.
Yeah, she had Emma's diamond.
Diamond.
Yeah. The way they played that out was really good. With where Scott thought it was gonna be Madeline.
Yep.
That was such a little knife twist.
Yep.
And it's on Genosha is like beginning the first reclamation. They're still trying to find bodies.
Yep.
And
of war coming is like a big thing.
Right.
Because like Strong Guy is like war is coming to Jubilee and their Sunspot.
On, yeah, that's right. So they're like expecting what a mutant human civil war.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? This is an homage to Grant Morrison's run where the diamond Emma Frost happened. She was indeed found like this on the island.
She was the only survivor.
Yeah, and so it looks like a good take. I guess that means she's probably going to, I bet, play a bigger role in season two.
Also, this is kind of a minor thing.
You know,
thing,
Scott hooked up with her and said that too. It's like, is Scott...
They probably won't do that.
Right, because they already kind of touched on the affair, and they had it be Madeline, the psychic affair.
Jubilee and Roberto going to his mom.
Yeah,
that played out really interestingly, because at
what
first
a good bit of writing.
I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, she's okay with it. And then she's like, but we got to keep it a secret. I was like, oh no.
Yeah. She's like, I don't mind that you're immune. It's totally okay with me.
But
it's like, they wouldn't understand. Yeah. So you just have to keep, you sit
well,
on
this,
that.
Yeah. This episode is dealing a lot with like human mutant relations. Cause the Beast and Trish Tilby stuff is kind of hit home.
Oh man.
Beast. Yeah. Smack talking Trish Tilby. Yeah.
Like kind of like in the same way that Scott is fed up.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to be your pet mutant.
Yeah. That was so, man, the writing is sometimes hitting these heights.
Yeah.
I was not prepared for
no.
hit. That eulogy, though, I still think is like, that's some of the best
highlight.
Writing on the whole show.
Can I tell you, I love seeing Nightcrawler in the opening credits.
Yeah.
Because one of my gripes, having gone back to watch the animated series, is that Nightcrawler is
like
never in it.
Yeah.
He's like in one or two episodes.
Well, neither is Colossus.
And that's a bummer. Colossus has like one or two episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see at least Nightcrawler joining, because for me, Nightcrawler is a core X-Men.
Right.
I miss Colossus too.
The 90s era meant that like Bishop and Cable had to like get prominence.
I wonder if we're gonna see the team change up more.
Maybe. I don't know.
I did not expect Cyclops to last this long. I thought he was gonna go off with Jean in it. But again, many curveballs have been thrown, and so I cannot predict.
Also, Theo James voicing Bastion. He does a really creepy.
Yeah, Bastion's creepy.
Yeah. You know what I was going to say about that is, I don't know who Bastion is. I don't have any particular interest in it. But under these writers, this writing room, I am interested in whatever they want to throw at me,
and
honestly.
And then we get that
with the one-eyed, flying purple people eaters.
Yeah. That's
you know, sometimes people can take a classic song and make it a creepy thing, and that was
they,
a good
they
use
did
that.
That.
And then we get that last minute reveal of Magneto's alive, Bastion has him, and him shaving him.
Yeah.
Like, that is such a weird, like, dominating thing.
Well,
that's right.
He had the collar on.
Yeah.
And
Forges,
he made those.
Yeah, I'm super looking forward to whatever comes next, but man, this has been such a good show.
It is. I'm super psyched for the next episode because Storm's back, she's got her powers, she's gonna... She has to deal with the loss of Genosha.
Yep.
She's probably not going to take it too well.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get a very reactionary X-Men. Like, very kind of like, okay, the ball's in our court.
I think we're going to see some pretty radical stuff.
Yeah, I do too.
She feels like somebody who might be able to give Bastion some problems.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that'll do it for us this week. Come out and see us on Free Comic Book Day on Saturday.
Yep.
And until next time,
Yo, Joe.
Jar Jar.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.